Did you present that defense to the jury?
Yeah, we basically tried to present what I would call a modified necessity defense.
The judge?
Is Judge Danner here.
And did the judge allow the necessity defense?
He did not allow the necessity defense under the grounds that Mr. Steppen had other alternatives other than sleeping on the porch of the Coral
what
Street.
What alternatives did he suggest he had?
Well, it's not that he suggested specifically what other alternatives there was. He suggested that Mr. Steppen and I hadn't proved that he hadn't looked into other alternatives, essentially. And, that gets down into kind of a touchy thing. Apparently, in Santa Cruz County, it's basically a crime to sleep anywhere in public.
In Santa Cruz City, it's illegal. In Santa Cruz County, it's illegal in most places, except on private property with the permission of the owner. And certain undisclosed rare pieces of public property that are not public right-of-ways or roads or parks.
Yeah, it becomes very difficult, essentially, for someone who has no resources. And in Mr. Steppen's case, he couldn't avail himself from the homeless shelter over here in Santa Cruz. So he was left in a situation where he was going to be breaking the law by sleeping.
In fact, didn't he ask the Homeless Services Center to provide him with an alternative which he would be happy to follow? That's what he told me in his discussion.
He wanted to find an alternative. He didn't agree with certain aspects of the program over there, which I'm sure he was able to elaborate in much better detail than myself.
Right.
And he didn't have an alternative, and he was left with
They told him he could not stay in the program unless he did certain kinds of work, which he felt was make work and was not appropriate, and also as a function of some sort of personal prejudice by some of the employees, and he was declined a place to sleep in a city, as I've been said, where there is no legal place for homeless people to sleep. Did you bring this to judicial notice that there was no legal place?
Yes, the officer who testified, who had been the arresting officer in this matter, he testified that what we were saying was correct. There is no legal place to sleep in Santa Cruz unless you're in some sort of public or private building, of which Mr. Steppen had no access to.
Now, with the ICON decision mentioned, the Santa Ana camping case that has ruled that you can, in fact, that they have an obligation to allow the necessity defense in camping cases.
We had discussed that, as I said, the necessity.
Did you raise the ICON question?
It was raised in the motions in limine. This happened outside the presence of the jury. And as I said, the necessity instruction was rejected, and that Mr. Steppen and I, Judge Janfeld, did not prove that Mr. Steppen did not have alternatives to sleeping on the front porch of the Coral Street shelter. I personally disagree with that, but
Shouldn't you actually appeal this, given the ICON decision, which rules that not that necessarily, you can be shown to be not guilty, but that you have the right to raise that defense, period?
We did raise that defense. I think it was properly denied, given the facts in this case. Unfortunately, Mr. Steppen, there are some other alternatives that may not have worked out on down the line, but Mr. Steppen didn't even take the steps to look into them.
Such as?
He did not look into any shelters outside the city of Santa Cruz, and I'm not saying that they would have necessarily worked out, but he acknowledged that essentially hadn't even looked into anything else outside of the shelter over there off Coral Street. And without him taking a look into things, I don't think that the offer of proof would sustain an appeal.
In fact, I'm pretty sure if you examined that night, which I believe was either August or September, when this last arrest was made,
I can't remember.
You will find that all shelters were full on that night, particularly in the summer. There was no shelter space in the county.
Absolutely.
And the reason I mention that to you,
the legal standard is Mr. Steppen, it may be very true that there wasn't any alternative. The problem was Mr. Steppen did not even look to find out. And we can't look the way the law works. And I agree with you.
Let me interrupt you to say, if you simply spoke to the Homeless Services Center, they had knowledge of shelters outside the county. Had there been any such shelter, they could have told him. If he requested of them alternate shelter, then, in fact, he was looking outside the city by asking them that question.
Yes. That, from what Robert had told me, he hadn't looked into.
He didn't ask any questions of anybody about this issue on that night?
On that night, I couldn't. I don't. I
I'm not trying to get you to any way impugn your defense. I'm saying that there still is an appealable issue here, and
given the effort proof, I believe if Mr. Steppen had taken a more active And I do think that if he had taken a more active role in looking for alternatives, he would have turned out, as you're indicating, shelters are full. He couldn't have gotten into somewhere, but that he didn't take a more active role.
Yeah, you said this before. What I'm telling you is that the act of asking the Homeless Services Center if they had a place put them in a position to be able to say, no, we don't. And they could also, and in saying that, they have knowledge of anything that's happening outside the county.
I don't know what their knowledge is.
I do. I work with the Homeless Issues Task Force. What I'm telling you is
One thing I want to talk to you about is I think Mr. Stephan, I mean, he was screwed. Okay, I think it's horrible what he was doing.
You're listening to Charlie Stevens, public defender, talking about the case of Robert Stephan in a jury trial for trespass, where he was convicted and sentenced to a year's probation for sleeping on the porch of the Homeless Services Center. The issue, however, that is being raised here, although Charlie, the public defender, sounds very sympathetic, is that Charlie, I think, is reluctant to challenge the current, he doesn't want to put in the work, I think, on an appeal here. And I think maybe he's because he thinks it'll be futile. But his claim that Robert Stephan did not look into that night other alternatives, I suspect, is false because he doesn't understand the situation. That is to say, the public defender doesn't understand that simply asking the Homeless Services Center if there's a place to stay is really the only thing you can do. There are no other legal places to stay in the city and county. They are the one emergency shelter program. There are no others. There are other programs you can get into by signing up and getting on waiting lists. And the emergency shelter program, Ken Cole, the head of the program, had told me and others earlier, was full every night throughout the summer. So you could have known even before you started there was no shelter. And that testimony could have been introduced by Charlie Stevens subpoenaing Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center, or other employees to talk about. Apparently he did subpoena some employees. And then when the defense was denied, that is to say he wasn't even able to, actually it's not clear to me whether he was able to even try to make the defense. He wanted to try to show the elements of the defense to the jury, and I believe what he said was that the judge, Art Danner, refused to allow him to present that defense to the jury. And he also claims, Charlie, the public defender, claims that Judge Danner was right in doing so because Robert Stephan, the homeless man, did not go out and ask every city, county, and shelter whether there was space. Oh, I have a comment here from Becky Johnson.
Actually, the Homeless Services Center is supposed to be the clearinghouse for all shelter for homeless people. So if a homeless person comes in seeking shelter at the Homeless Services Center, they'll either be placed in the ISSP program or referred to other shelter options in the city and the county. And since Robert Stephan had sought shelter in the ISSP and been denied that, it goes without saying that there were no other shelter options for him available that night.
So it can show either ignorance on the part of the public defender, a well-meaning ignorance, or it can show a kind of a lack of, it really tends to show ignorance, I think. Although, to me, for a man who's been jailed 3 times, and I guess Charlie was on the case in at least one of those, and I suspect on previous cases, again, you know, where the case came to court and then charges were dismissed. It's not like it was a new issue coming up for the public defenders. And I've got to say, it's another example of public defenders giving inadequate time and resources to a homeless case. I mean, the most obvious example of this recently from Charlie Stevens was when I spoke to him, as I said, several days ago in court. Actually, it was on the occasion of Robert Stephan's trying to get this injunction set aside, and instead it was continued for until December 27th that he can't sit on the bench. And I asked Charlie Stevens, I said, Charlie, aren't you appealing this? Because Judge Danner ruled you couldn't even use the necessity defense, and that has been shown to be an issue that can be raised as a matter of course before a jury on camping cases by the ICORN decision, which came down at the beginning of this year. So Danner can't make that choice. It's a clearly appealable issue. He said, well, I don't think I'm going to spend my resources that way. That was what he said. Let's hear some more of Charlie Stephan's on this issue. That's Charlie Stevens, all right.
what he was doing, excuse me, what was done to him.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, as I spoke with Mr. Steffen throughout the course of this, I think if he really wanted to create an appellate issue, there are certain steps he could have done differently.
Why don't you give us a brief rundown about so the next person who happens to can, in fact, take the proper course?
I believe that what he should have done is probably not picked private property to sleep on, but probably should have picked a public spot. Because the private trespassing, I think, creates
additional issues?
Additional issues. I think he should pick the public spot. Secondly, I think Robert, though I agree that he probably would have found out that there was no other places to get him into, I think he needed to document and take a look into other alternatives to show that there, so we can make a very good record, is that there were no alternatives other than just sleeping out here and in essence breaking the law. Because I do agree that he didn't have any alternatives. Unfortunately, in a lot of it was because of his incarceration, we weren't able to make a good record for that.
Thank you, Charles. I appreciate that, and we'll try to get back to you for the next case.
I hope in Mr. Steffen's case there won't be another one. My hopes is that he's able to get along without having any troubles with the law.
500 to 1,500 who can't. I'm not sure one of them will find this way into this court.
If they do, I'd be more than happy to help with them. And you know, my real hope is that these sort of cases stop getting prosecuted. I think that would be the best and most just way to deal with it.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
And that was Charlie Stevens, public defender, Judge Stevens' son, discussing with us the Robert Steffen case, where Robert Steffen was found guilty of trespassing for sleeping on the porch of the Homeless Services Center and refusing to move when asked to move, though not being given a legal place to move to. Well, on the line with us, we have that moving guy, man about city council, Scott Graham. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good. We always try to call you before a city council meeting and often after to get the kind of the update. Firstly, you tend to prowl the library and keep your eyes on the agendas, and also you tend to have the staying power to sit through these long council meetings that the rest of us just don't have any interest in. And you come up with details, I think, that are very important and educate the rest of us. How you doing?
Oh, okay. The biggest thing on the agenda this week is the evening agenda. There's going to be this no parking zone on the west side.
The Almar Avenue appeal.
Right. I guess they're going to dedicate the entire evening to it, from what I understand.
Wow.
So hopefully the troops will get out there and people will come and complain about this, because it's obviously an attempt just to further limit the places where homeless people can park their vehicles at night and sleep in them. I mean, they've already excluded almost the entire west side industrial area. I'm not sure if there's even a street in the industrial area where people can park at night. And the Harvey West area, the neighbors over there, there's a small group of people that actually live in homes there, even though it's industrial. And they're trying to make the Harvey West area no parking zone from 10 at night till 6 in the morning also. So, I mean, this is just the beginning of a bigger issue.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting to remind people, this is, of course, another example of busy work by one of our own police officers, or Officer Jim Howes.
Public service officer.
Actually, he's a police officer, and he's not a community service officer.
No, not community. He's the public. He's supposed to, like, you know, help the public.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's their official liaison to the public.
Well, that's interesting, because I know that the last time I heard of him helping the public was when he went over to the farmer's market to inform Bob LaMonica, when he was gathering signatures for the rent stabilization initiative, that it was illegal for him to do so unless he broke down his stand for where he'd been doing his petitioning for the last, well, people have been petitioning from that spot for the last 2 or 3 years, that he would be given a ticket and or arrested. And Bob, ever the proper to law enforcement officials kind of guy that he is, did so, but informed him that he would be back the next week and he would not be moving. And Howes then, after getting the word from Belcher, backed down and said, oh, well, we were concerned that handicapped vehicles and handicapped people were being, interfered with because you're too close to the road here. And, of course, those of us who have been to the farmer's market know that Bob was situated in a spot he'd always been in, and we
in
didn't
the
get
dirt.
In the dirt, and the, you know, and he, the claim, what happened was Howes apparently had mapped this whole campaign out 3 months ago, and gotten an opinion from the city attorney that justified his proceeding, just as we've gotten seen the police get another opinion from the city attorney, or I guess it was the city council getting this opinion on the confidentiality requirements of the independent investigator in the May 22nd incidences, or that they are now barred from revealing to the public. Anyway, Howes was involved essentially in trying to shut down the First Amendment at the farmer's market, and really kind of an incomprehensible activity. I mean, I talked to him about it. Howes has this persona that he's approachable and talkable, but when members of the Homeless Issues Task Force tried to talk to him about this Elmore Avenue deal, what happened with the Elmore Avenue deal was that he was he apparently was the person who was advising Elmore Avenue people that he couldn't tell people to move on in their vehicles. He couldn't give them camping tickets. His hands had been tied by the city council, and the best thing they could do was get the entire area roped off with signs, with no parking signs at night, and he in essence brought this petition to the city council, or I should say to the, I guess it was like the Transportation Commission. And at that time, the Transportation Commission failed to inform the Homeless Issues Task Force about this, even though it was clearly a homeless issue, because it had to do with camping violations. And they passed it unanimously, thinking it was just a matter of helping out some residents in a neighborhood from unwanted parkers and people parking in their vehicles. And however, when I had Fred Geiger on the show last week, and he is on the Transportation Commission, he said he never would have voted for this, or he would have taken a different perspective on it had he known it seemed to be not only a discriminatory kind of action against homeless people in vehicles that didn't have, you know, any specific anything to do with other parking problems, but also that it was part of what seemed to be a pattern, because the next meeting, Harvey West people came wanting to have that same thing done to their area, again, in what seems to be an attempt to remove legal places for homeless people in their vehicles to be, just as Bunny's Shoes is removing the bench for this man to be at, just as the downtown ordinances makes it illegal to sit down 10 feet from a shop up and down the street anywhere in a commercial and a downtown business district, and also along Soquel Avenue and other commercial districts and along the boardwalk. This is another attack on public spaces for homeless people.
Right, yeah. It's just they're finding ways to slowly herd people out of town.
Well, Scott, you yourself, although you live in a house now, you've been homeless for long periods of time, meaning houseless?
Yeah, I mean, I lived in the bushes here in Santa Cruz back in the days before there was such a thing as homelessness. They used to call us street people back then.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you live in that condition?
Basically, probably over 10 years.
And it's not like you're some sort of soft-hearted, knee-jerk liberal here. I mean, you have criticized me sharply in the past, suggesting that why don't campers who trash areas in the Poganip clean up their act? Why don't I spend as much time, you know, cautioning them as I do criticizing city authorities?
I mean, that is part of the perceived problem. People leave large amounts of trashes in places, and that's just something for people to point at and say, see, we can't do anything for these people because they just ruin everything.
I mean,
and I think if people got it more together, then they, you know, that criticism wouldn't be there anymore.
Well, I suggest that when people get camping tickets, instead of getting fines or jail terms, they'd be required to take a camping course. You know, and how to camp,
yeah,
you know, lightly.
They could go to the Boy Scout meetings or something.
Right, provided they're not gay or atheists, of course.
Right, yeah.
Right. So there is this issue of the Elmore Avenue. You know, I had thought, and I've talked to Fred Geiger, apparently the Transportation Commission voted last time, if I understand properly from him, when Harvey West came up with the same no homeless sign posting proposal on their property, though they don't call it no homeless, of course, it's no parking at night. They said, no way, and they unanimously referred it to the city council, said this is a political issue, it has nothing to do with real parking, transportation concerns, and moreover it violates, as I think you pointed out, the master plan freezing resolution or decision made by the city council last summer when they said they didn't want any major changes until a master plan for transportation was coming up with. Is that?
Yeah, on the day they voted on the master transportation plan, I think it was in June, possibly, there was also a couple of neighborhoods that wanted speed bumps and parking controls, and they did those and said that that was it. That was the end of, they weren't going to do any more parking controls or speed bumps until 2 years when the master transportation plan is supposed to be done.
Uh-huh. Well, I know that the Elmore Avenue issue became a matter of some importance to the Homeless Issues Task Force, which actually Laura Tucker, who is a formerly homeless woman, a mom, single parent, who lived in her vehicle for some time and sort of found some lodging and struggled to keep it, and has also been sort of the mini staff person of the Homeless Issues Task Force. She gets $5 an hour, while Don Lane, Mayor Byer's own hand-picked member, gets $20 an hour to do the major staffing. But she was so alarmed when she heard about this Elmore Avenue thing that she rushed out and just on the very day when the deadlines closed, filed an appeal of this issue that said that they could post these no parking signs along Elmore Avenue, barring people in their vehicles from parking there at night. And in a way, it's kind of a, substantively, it's a very minor issue because it's only a two-block area or two- or three-block area. But in terms of principle, if this is what's going on in terms of a gradual homeless social cleansing of the city where people are being barred essentially because of their status of living in a vehicle, it's a very significant thing. And the Homeless Issues Task Force, she went around, well, she first had to borrow money. She went to different people. I put up $10. I think she put up a total of $50 for all this. And she granted the appeal, and I think in the end the appeal money was returned because she was able to show indigency, or else it was taken over by the Homeless Issues Task Force, which agreed to support her appeal, saying this was a social issue which had to do with civil rights of homeless people. And so they presumably will be coming on Tuesday evening at the 7 o'clock city council session day after tomorrow, when this Elmore Avenue appeal will be coming up.
Yeah, I urge everyone to go to that. And another thing people should go to is tonight at the hall.
Before we get to that, I want to talk to you about that again. I want to hear that. Let me just finish this Elmore Avenue thing. Keith Sugar, the mayor, for the first time in the history of the Homeless Issues Task Force, came to the last Homeless Issues Task Force meeting on Monday and stayed for about, oh, I guess an hour, answering questions and, presenting a very good kind of open, receptive appearance, and I say appearance because I don't believe they had any substance to it, and I'll tell you why in a moment, to the Homeless Issues Task Force. And, you know, he made some suggestions to the Homeless Issues Task Force that they present those very arguments that you were suggesting, namely that this was, this whole business of presenting new parking restrictions at this time was against the whole city's code, or the city's determination to wait until there's a master plan in place, transportation plan. And I think that's probably good legal strategy. But the problem, of course, is he didn't talk about this as a civil rights issue for homeless people. He seemed to really veer away from that and shy away from that. And indeed, the next day, when the Homeless Issues Task Force, and I'm reminding those who are listening, if you haven't already called, do call in, 420-5020, City Council, and tell them, pass the resolution, or at least put on the agenda the resolution the Homeless Issues Task Force has requested Mayor Sugar to put on the agenda, the emergency resolution that his own task force said put on before you go away for vacation, which is suspend sleeping and camping ordinances pending the establishment of safe zones. And Sugar the next day, of course, wouldn't even hear that. I just wanted to point that out, that was the last we heard of Elmore Avenue from the mayor, and I suspect that they're not going to, I mean, I'm glad people should come to this and certainly support it and speak up on it. I agree with you completely. I don't think it's going to get, I think the appeal is going to win. But you say something is happening tonight, Sunday night.
Well, there's a benefit at the Vets Hall tonight. It's called Warm the Homeless.
Oh, really?
And it starts, the doors open at 6 and the show starts at 6:30.
Where does the money go?
I'm not sure. It's called the Small Cup Productions.
Huh.
It's,
could be a homeless garden project deal.
I'm not really sure. It's Streetlight Records, Cafe Pergolisi, and Sessions Records are sponsors of the show.
At 6 o'clock tonight, is it?
Yeah,
it's
Cato, The Great Divide, and Missing 23rd.
Is it free to homeless people?
I'm not sure. It says $5 at the door, donate warm article of clothing, and get a dollar off.
Oh, okay. Well, that's another thing that's happening.
Downstairs at the Vets Hall.
Anything else, by the way, coming up at City Council? I know that Steve Argue and Robert Steffen's claims will be on the afternoon agenda, plus a $500,000, I guess, budget assessment or appropriation for the homeless kitchen is going to be on the afternoon agenda.
Right, for the whole remodel down there.
Right, that's kind of already in the works. I don't think that this is very controversial.
Yeah, they've already approved it. This is just the actual final bookkeeping to actually put the money in place.
And you haven't seen the actual agenda yourself?
No, I was actually going to go look at the library if I can get there before it closes today.
Well, maybe if you get there before 1:30 and you find out, and this is what we're really wondering about, I was able to get a quick look at the agenda yesterday, but my computer wouldn't work today on the internet, and I can't see if the shoulder tap is going to be back on the evening agenda. I assume it is.
I'm not sure, Robert. I'll have to get back to you on that.
Give me a quick call from the library if you can.
Okay.
Appreciate it,
Scott. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
And that was Scott Graham, again, rushing off to the library to get us some more information.
I'm wondering if the shoulder tap will be there. I was told by the city clerk that it was going to be on the December 14th agenda, but Mayor Sugar had said that he wanted to get some statistics from Steve Belcher, the chief of police of the Santa Cruz Police Department, both on statistics on whether there was an actual need for this ordinance and more clear ideas about what would happen to youth who are cited under the ordinance, because it's certainly not written into the body of text. And when I spoke to Mayor Sugar on Monday, he said that the police had not provided any information thus far. So it's a little up in the air. Mayor Sugar may have decided to postpone it and give Police Chief Belcher more time to get that information to him.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't see why Sugar might want to postpone it for his own reasons, but Sugar, what I heard sort of offhand, sort of grapevine stuff, is that Sugar doesn't agree with the shoulder tap law, but also doesn't think that the battle can be won. And Crone, on the other hand, feels strongly about it, and I don't think he cares whether the battle can be won. He feels the issue has to be raised. And of course, that's what we had hoped Sugar would do around the issue of the Homeless Issues Task Force's resolution, which, again, this is the emergency resolution after 3 months by a $10,000 commission. They're saying there are beatings out there, there's shelter emergency out there, we need you to act now so the police stop harassing people, so people can sleep safely in groups, so there can be some community response to this issue. And Sugar won't do anything.
And of course, Mike Rotkin is in favor of the shoulder tap law. He thinks there should be a 10-minute discussion and a 7-0 vote in favor of it, and doesn't understand why that's not happening.
Right. Well, I prefer to see most of the time we're spending on shoulder tap spent on the Homeless Issues Task Force. But again, shoulder tap does affect hundreds and hundreds, thousands of youth in the city limits. I mean, it's a significant law, so it has to be discussed.
Yeah, my concern about the shoulder tap is that it will result in stay-away orders for youth from outside of businesses, maybe even in the entire downtown area.
For those who are interested in finding out more about shoulder tap, you can, when you call in to the city council today, as I know you will, all you loyal listeners, at 420-5020, that's a line you can leave a message on today, say, put the Homeless Issues Task Force resolution, put the no sleeping ban until there are safe zones resolution on the agenda for the next council meeting for the 14th, and also call me up and tell me if shoulder tap is on the agenda. I need to know that too. And you'll get a response back from the council member of your choice. Well, we're kind of beginning to get up against the time here. This is the last half hour of Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, 96.3 FM here. And our call-in number, for those of you who have been listening but still haven't quite been able to get yourselves to get to the phone, is 427-3772. Now, tomorrow is the meeting of the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, or the Review Board, as they like to call themselves. And they have two public hearings announced, but I'll bet you haven't heard about either of them because they aren't doing much advertising, and they're not really public hearings. They're sort of these pro forma things that they call public hearings that aren't really presented as such or prepared for as such. One of them is to recommend that the Police Review Board should have jurisdiction over citizen complaints filed against CSOs, or community service officers. And for those of you who don't know who they are, those are the guys in the light blue downtown who train the hosts, the green costumed outfit folks who walk up and down, kind of eyes and ears of the police force, looking for small marijuana busts. They have a downtown information center, as they call it, right next to what was the Del Mar Theater before it closed down there. CSOs, there aren't really many of them. I think there are about three or four, maybe five or six of them. And they do issue a lot of tickets around these bullshit downtown ordinances. And so we've asked city council, and they've been involved in other things. They can issue tickets. I think they're allowed to carry guns. I think that's the difference with the CSOs, I believe. And they were created by the police force after the Citizens Police Review Board was formed in 1994, and so they weren't a part of the original law, which said every police officer, complaints against police officers shall be reviewed by the CPRB. Of course, that was completely diluted when Chief Belcher illegally began classifying some things as minor complaints and not sending them to the CPRB, and the City Council retroactively okayed that practice by Chief Belcher. So there's that to think of, too. Anyway, the public hearing is coming up on whether CSOs should also be a part of the general broad body of police that is, quote, reviewed by the Police Review Board. This really means very little because the Police Review Board doesn't review police officer complaints or complaints about police officers. It reviews the review of in the investigation of the police department itself on these complaints. And, of course, it doesn't do independent investigation, and it doesn't do a public hearing. Now, there is one so-called independent investigation that has been voted by the City Council, or I should say approved by the City Manager, and it was voted by the CPRB about the May 22nd events, the war against Yugoslavia and the police department's bad reaction to that protest and its inappropriate behavior there. However, that investigation is being kept confidential or classified from birth. And not because that's the practice in other cities, not because it's really required by state law, but because that's what the city attorney says is required. And the City Council will not go for another legal opinion, will not examine the independent evidence of other cities about it. And there's a story today about it in the Sentinel of a sort by Daryl Cole in the local section, page A9, for those of you who have that paper. And it's really kind of an empty story. I talked to Daryl Cole. I kind of hope to get some details in. He mentions a couple of things I say, but he doesn't mention the key facts that the Richmond, Oakland, and I believe San Diego police review boards have the same kind of setup we have, and they believe that their investigations are open. That is to say that if there's an investigation, the result can be read by the public, as it should be. That's the whole point. There's a complicated kind of...
Aren't those cities in the state of California?
Correct.
And subject to the same California state law?
Correct. You know, the Police Officers Association is relying on a law which states that anything which ends up in a police officer's personnel file and can be used for discipline is confidential. Even if it originally wasn't confidential, it becomes stamped confidential. There's an argument that a police officer's personnel file is confidential. It's his own business, and I can have some sympathy for that. But what is being claimed here is that the investigation prior to its arriving in the police officer's personnel file is not, even if it's being held in public hearings and so forth, it becomes a confidential document because ultimately it sits in the police officer's file. And that's ridiculous. But that's the torturous interpretation that City Attorney John Barisone is giving, and that our City Council, after two closed sessions, has decided will rule. And the CPRB has decided it's going to go along with this, wagging its tail and shuffling right along. Probably not wagging its tail. They've asked for there to be an open investigation, but you don't hear them calling loudly for that or publicizing their concerns about that or insisting on public hearings. That's something they can do even after the investigator gives her report in. They could announce they're going to hold public hearings and subpoena officers, and that would be public if five votes vote for it to be public. Five votes on the CPRB.
You know, I talked to Mayor Byers about a month and a half ago and urged her to support making the independent investigation open to the public. I said there was pressing that she do so because the public confidence in the process would not be upheld unless that report were made public. We're not satisfied with behind-the-scenes secret deals and closed sessions that those results are fair or accurate. And she said that she wanted the independent investigator's report to be as full as possible. And the only way for police officers to testify and or to cooperate with the independent investigator was if the report were kept confidential, and that's what she was in favor of. But now, after reading the article in today's Sentinel, it looks like we're getting the worst of both worlds. Barbara Williams and the Police Officers Association is adamant that she's going to discourage any police officers from cooperating with the independent investigator. Therefore, the independent investigation is only half a report, and it's also going to be kept secret too.
Right. Originally, there was some question about whether subject officers or witness officers could be interviewed or would be interviewed. And now it looks like neither of them is going to be interviewed by the independent investigator, Diane Christensen, who was hired at a cost of $10,000 and came down from Berkeley and has been down here talking to all the people who were filed complaints about the police and witnesses to that behavior, but the police apparently won't talk with her. And we don't see a big scandal about this in the paper. And part of that is because the Citizens Police Review Board isn't doing anything about it, and the City Council isn't doing anything about it, except just sort of quietly rolling over and accepting it. And this, it really is alarming to some of us who originally had hoped that the new council members, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, who appointed three new members of the Citizens Police Review Board, Arnold Leff, Sandy Brown, and Becky Blythe, were going to start a new regime. It's true they don't have a majority, but with the appointment of another person, Daniel Alper, there would eventually be a majority, and indeed on the independent investigation, with all the pressure of the activists, and there were several dozen activists who went to meetings this summer, and 4-hour-long Citizens Police Review Board meetings were held demanding an independent investigation. They were able to press Lisa Rose, who is generally a pro-police appointee, to agree to an independent investigation. And once that all happened, what have we got? We've got public hearings coming up this week. Not on either the independent investigation or on any of the complaints where people have been asking for public hearings year after year but not getting them, even from the new people. But we have are these kind of really bogus, we have two bogus public hearings. One's about CSOs. This is something that people agree on. CSOs should be investigated. They should be a part of the police department who get reviewed by the Police Review Board, although it doesn't really matter because, as we know, the Police Review Board doesn't really do any reviewing. They just look over the shoulders of police officers and read their reports. And they haven't sustained virtually any complaints this year.
That's because when they read the police report, if the police says one thing and the person making the complaint says the other thing, they seem to believe the police every time.
They don't ask that the police officer and the complainant come forward and give their account so they can judge themselves, asking questions and talking. No, they simply take the very probably well-documented, well-researched police report with the prestige of the police officer, the internal affairs officer, Sergeant Sepulveda, standing in the hallway waiting to come in and advise them, sitting on their dais on the board in the public hearing where he sits throughout every board meeting. You'll see him there tomorrow at 5:30 when he shows up there. And they don't ask the claimant to come in. They don't talk to the claimant. So for that, for us to get any kind of fair result out of this is impossible. And the one thing you would have expected is somebody like Sandy Brown or Arnie Leff or Becky Blythe, you know, the great new regime people, would have come forward and made some demands for a change in the process. But the fact is, there has not been one person voting for a public hearing except in one instance. That was Sandy Brown, I think, in one of the votes. But in the dozen or more cases that have come before them in the last 9 months, we've seen no votes for a public hearing, no requests that the person who gave the report be given as much time as the officers who are supposedly the ones under scrutiny. And they aren't even being brought forward, the officers, to be questioned by the board.
So what's this other issue that's coming up on this CPRB?
The other issue coming up Monday, December 13th, and I'm sorry, it's not at 5:30. I see that the meeting has been moved to 7:30. So for all of you who normally go at 5:30, because it normally is, scratch that out and put in your calendar 7:30. Apparently there's some sort of conflict, so they're holding it later. 7:30 tomorrow night, the CPRB will be meeting, and the second issue they're going to be having for public hearing is whether to recommend the Santa Cruz Police Department implement tracking of racial information from traffic stops. This has to do with driving while brown and black harassment, which has been fairly well documented in many parts of the country and has been claimed here in the city as well. I've heard about it from people of black and brown skin in my interviewing for this radio show. It's no big issue. I mean, it's something that they should sort of simply pass on immediately to the city council, or alternately hold large, massive, well-publicized public hearings on the issue in order to activate the community. But neither of these things is happening. What's happening instead is they are holding a quick public hearing, which isn't being very well publicized at all, in violation of a promise made to Pat Clark of the NAACP that they would have a public hearing well prepared for and well publicized. Now, I've heard it also said from board member Becky Blythe that, oh, they're going to have a number of public hearings on this issue.
And we also heard from Sergeant Lee Sepulveda that if they're interested in enacting something like that, there's a $250,000 price tag for it.
I don't know about that. I guess we should check with San Jose, which has supposedly voluntarily implemented this practice. We know Governor Davis has refused to let a bill, he's vetoed a bill that requires this. But you know, my concern about the CPRB now is that we, and I've talked to you about this a lot, Becky, I know off air, is to have the police department the real focus. The police department is the real focus, not the CPRB. I mean, I'm tired of talking about a little toy poodle that runs around and eats up money and eats up our attention, but doesn't do anything significant in terms of reviewing real police misconduct. And what we need to do is have activists stop focusing on the CPRB and start considering the real policies of the police department, like pepper spraying, use of lethal force, huge cost overruns on the in the police station, toxic waste dump in the police station's parking lot, you name it. There are numerous issues that need to be looked into seriously and methodically by people who have the information and then can present a report to the community, so that we don't wait for a bunch of political appointees who are scared of their own shadows or who are worried about, quote, getting the votes before they speak truth to power, to really get the information out there into the community. And what's happened recently has really kind of put the seal of bad faith on this whole thing for me. At the last Police Review Board meeting, when I began discussing this issue of CSOs and why aren't they just going ahead and saying, yeah, make a change in the law, add CSOs, who cares? I mean, it's, you know, it's something you've supported for months anyway. And they said, well, we can't because we want Chief Belcher to be at the next meeting, and he's on vacation, and so we have to wait till he comes back into town. And I said, you mean Chief Belcher doesn't have a second in command who can come and talk about the issue? Chief Belcher can't write you a letter with his concerns? The entire process of complaints has to wait until Chief Belcher comes back? And, of course, that they said, well, yes, in essence. So I began talking.
So much for independence.
Right. They don't take seriously the fact that they're supposed to be advocates for the citizenry. But, I mean, having said this 1,000 times, it seems kind of stupid for me to say it another time. And I began talking about CSO Community Service Officer Malate. This is the older Asian American police officer downtown who has been harassing older women who beg on the streets, who peacefully ask for spare change, by misreading the city codes to them, telling them they can't sit down with a sign. And he knows this. We brought this to his attention like a year ago, that this was violates the city law. The city law is bad enough, but it violates the city law. And Arnie Leff of the CPRB, the chair of the Citizens Police Review Board, interrupted me and said, you can't use those names at the mic. You cannot use police officers' names. It's inappropriate. And he shut down another person when they did that. And I said, I'm going to use police officers' names. This is the only place that these criticisms get out into any public forum. And this is where they're going to go. And if you wanted to cut off the First Amendment, cut it off. And call in the police force to enforce it. At least it would graphically demonstrate who's running the show. And so now what's happened is I'm reviewing the minutes of the last police review board meeting. There is no mention of this crucial issue at all. There is no mention of the censorship that happened at the last police review board meeting. And so...
Now, Arnie Leff offered you an alternative. He said that there's a process that if you had a complaint, of course, wouldn't, not for CSOs at this point in time, but that they have a complaint process and that you could file that complaint in writing, but they weren't going to hear it orally spoken.
Right. They said that you can file a complaint, which will be sent to the police department, and the police department will take its own sweet time, as much time as it wants, investigating the complaint. And then if it's a serious enough complaint that you're filing a claim against the city for money damages, that'll delay it another 6 months. And if there's a criminal charge attached to that complaint, well, that'll delay it 6 months. But eventually, it'll get back to the CPRB, although it'll be secret at this point. It'll be stamped secret, so anybody coming into the police review board office will not be able to tell about the name of the officer you complained about. Still, somehow, this process is supposed to guarantee public access to what's going on. I mean, it's preposterous.
And that was what Barbara Williams, who's from the Police Officers Association, had asked for at the previous meeting, was that she got up at the mic and was very indignant and said, oh, how terrible it is that people come up here and speak about officers and use their names publicly and that those poor officers cannot come up and defend themselves.
The point is, Becky, I think that
Lisa Rose bent over backwards. We
want to stop talking about Lisa Rose. We want to stop talking about Arnie Leff. And you should shut me up.